Welcome to the Foreign Desk's summer series. For 4 weeks, we'll examine historical events as the Foreign Desk might have covered them at the time, working only from the information which would have been available to us. This week, it's the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand in 1914. Guy Delaunay, Monocle's Balkans correspondent, plays Monocle's Balkans correspondent. Quentin Peel, associate fellow with the Europe programme at Chatham House and former correspondent in Brussels, Moscow and Berlin for the Financial Times, plays a diplomatic reporter. Tamara Scheer, historian at the University of Vienna, plays an Austrian analyst. In our parallel universe, this episode broadcasts on Saturday, July 4th, 1914. Last Sunday, June 28, 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand, presumptive heir to the throne of Austria-Hungary and nephew of the Emperor, was assassinated in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia-Herzegovina, along with his wife Sophie, Duchess of Hohenberg. Those responsible for the murders appear to be a gang of young Serbian nationalists, aggrieved perhaps at the Austrian Empire's annexation of Bosnia-Herzegovina in 1908. There is even some suggestion that the killers may have been acting with the knowledge, perhaps even the encouragement, of the regime in Belgrade. This is why the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand, though obviously a serious event in itself, may be more serious still. Austria, already suspicious of Serbia's ambitions in the Balkans, has a natural ally in Germany. Austro-Hungarian Emperor Franz Joseph, who has worn the Habsburg crown for 66 years, is an old man. It is unclear how sound his judgment is, or indeed if he is making the judgments. It may be that vindictive mutterings emerging from Vienna and Berlin are a ruse, an attempt to leverage the Archduke's death to intimidate Serbia. Certainly no other European powers have said much beyond offering the standard condolences. Is this going to be a much bigger deal or not? Or could it possibly become one by accident? This is the Foreign Desk.
If the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand and Sophie is linked not just to some fringe pan-Slav nationalist group or some fringe Serbian nationalist group, but rather to the powers that be in Serbia, then this is obviously going to have much wider ramifications. Austria-Hungary will view this as an unfriendly act by another state, which is to say, the Kingdom of Serbia.
We haven't had a serious war in Europe, very localized affairs, for decades, and it would be unconscionable, actually, for us to blunder into some bigger war. But what worries me is, sitting here in London, actually that people here are not watching out for the dangers. They're not really taking it very seriously. They're very distracted by the rise of the suffragettes, of the Home Rule campaign in Ireland. Nobody's really paying any attention. And I have just a nasty feeling that we could blunder into something stupid.
You're listening to The Foreign Desk. I'm Andrew Muller. Well, first of all, our man in Sarajevo, Guy Delaunay, joins me on a surprisingly technologically advanced telephone for 1914. Hopefully he can hear us. Guy, can you hear us okay? Are we coming through?
Hello, this is Guy Delaunay. I'm coming to you from Sarajevo. Do you copy? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you as well, Guy. Thank you for joining us. Guy, first of all, what do we understand now about what actually happened in Sarajevo last Sunday?
Well, on the very most basic scale, Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie were both shot to death by an assassin in Sarajevo as they drove in their motorcade along the river in the centre of the city. Now, Franz Ferdinand was there in his role as the Inspector General of the Imperial Army for the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And he's had increasing influence in Austria-Hungary in recent years. And this visit, in a way, was part of that increasing profile. And there was more to it than that as well. But to get back to the pure facts of the assassination, they actually avoided one assassination attempt by a matter of inches. Somebody in the crowd along the quayside threw a grenade at their car. It bounced off the folded convertible roof of their car back into the crowd, and it was on a timer. It then exploded, causing injuries in the crowd. The royal couple and their motorcade then went on to their planned destination, which was the city hall in Sarajevo, where they were meeting the mayor and other dignitaries there. And it was on their return journey that the second assassin approached their car with a pistol at the corner of the Latin bridge over the river and shot them both to death. They died in the car as they were being taken to hospital.
Now, from the very fact that there was, as you pointed out, an attempt on the Archduke's life earlier in the day as well, we can infer that this is not one random malcontent acting entirely under their own cognizance. There is a plot. There is a conspiracy afoot, isn't there? What do we know about the perpetrators?
Well, we know so far that they seem to be members of a Pan-Slav group known as Young Bosnia, which is affiliated with a Serbian secret society called Black Hand. Now, both of these groups are committed to the idea of bringing all the South Slav people together in one state. Serbia has its independence. It also now has control of Macedonia and Kosovo. But the other South Slav people in Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina are still under the control of the Habsburg Empire. And it does seem that this dual assassination has been motivated by the desire to somehow remove these lands from Austro-Hungarian control and put them either directly under Serb control, or to bring all these South Slav lands unified together in one country.
Is there much support in the Balkans, especially in Serbia, for that kind of sentiment? Do the Black Hand and the perpetrators of this assassination, are they operating from a position of mainstream support, or is this a fairly eccentric niche preoccupation?
Well, for a secret organization, it's known that an awful lot of Serbian army officers, very senior Serbian army officers, are either members or otherwise involved with Black Hand. We know that the Serbian royal family is quite enthusiastic about Black Hand and its aims, and we know that the Serbian government is sympathetic towards them as well. Now, this is problematic, because if the assassination of Archduke Franz Ferdinand and Sophie is linked not just to some fringe Pan-Slav nationalist group or some fringe Serbian nationalist group, but rather to the powers that be in Serbia, then this is obviously going to have much wider ramifications. Austria-Hungary will view this as an unfriendly act by another state, which is to say the Kingdom of Serbia.
There have been narrower repercussions already of the more spontaneous sort. Sarajevo is, of course, an ethnically and religiously, well, depends how you want to look at it, either divided city or extremely cosmopolitan one, but there has been anti-Serb rioting reported.
It's interesting in some respects. It's obviously very problematic if you're an ethnic Serb in Bosnia-Herzegovina or indeed in Croatia over the past week. Sarajevo has perhaps seen the worst of the rioting, where the Hotel Europa, which is the biggest and grandest hotel in the city, was systematically ransacked by a group of around 200 people. Now, the reason they did that is the Hotel Europa is owned by a Serb businessman. People have died in these disturbances as well. Serb-owned businesses have been targeted by the rioters. But the interesting thing is that these riots do not seem to have been particularly spontaneous. They're responding to a call by the Austro-Hungarian authorities to cleanse the city of the shame of the assassination. So, in effect, it's rent-a-mob who are responsible for this. And it's difficult to get a sense of to what degree this is due to ethnic tensions between Bosniaks, Croats, and ethnic Serbs, and to what degree it's the Austro-Hungarians who are very much afraid of the power of Pan-Slav sentiment, because, as you say, Sarajevo is a crossroads of the fates, very much like Beirut in that respect. But what almost all of the people have in common in Sarajevo is that they are Slavs, and the Pan-Slav movement has been growing in power, growing in influence, and that's been causing great concern among the Austro-Hungarians.
Is it possible, then, that the perpetrators of this assassination may not have thought the repercussions of it all the way through? I mean, it's fairly clear what they were trying to accomplish. It is an attempt to slough off Habsburg rule and promote an amount of Slavic unity. But is it possible that they may end up conjuring the exact opposite?
they were certainly aiming to get rid of the Austro-Hungarians. That's the biggest aim. Now, whether the assassination of a senior figure in the Habsburg imperial family, who was actually in favor of the reform of the empire, was the way to do it, is another question altogether. Franz Ferdinand's visit wasn't just about inspecting the troops. He also was looking to put forward a view to make it not just the dual monarchy, but some sort of triple monarchy, that he was looking at a way of bringing together the Habsburg territories in Slavic lands and establishing another monarchy within that. And that was something which young Bosnia and Black Hand were very concerned about from their part. If you have a solution within the Austro-Hungarian Empire for the Slav people, then your pan-Slav movement, which would have its power base in Belgrade, is very much going to lose steam.
Just finally, Guy, on the subject of the assassin himself who fired the fatal shots, his name, I believe, is Gavrilo Princip. What do we know about him?
As you say, he's a young man, 19 years old, and he's affiliated with the Black Hand group, with the Young Bosnia group. He has said that he wants Austria-Hungary out of Bosnia. He is a pan-Slav nationalist, and those are his goals. He tried to kill himself immediately after the assassination, as did his compatriot who threw the grenade at the car earlier on. Both of them survived those suicide attempts and have been taken into custody, although after a serious beating from the crowd.
Guy Delaunay in Sarajevo, thank you for joining us. You're listening to The Foreign Desk. I'm joined now by the journalist Quentin Peel and the analyst Tamara Shear. Now, as we try to figure out, Quentin and Tamara, what the significance of this assassination might end up being, I'm put in mind, inevitably, of a couple of quotes attributed to Otto von Bismarck, the late Iron Chancellor, who left us a few years ago now. He once said, as you'll doubtless remember, that if there ever is another war in Europe, it will come out of some damned silly thing in the Balkans. But he also said, of course, that the Balkans was not worth the healthy bones of a single Pomeranian grenadier. So I guess what we're trying to figure out today is whether or not either or both of those suggestions of Bismarck's are accurate. Tamara, it feels sensible to start with you in Vienna. We have, of course, seen Archduke Ferdinand's funeral in Vienna, and he has now been taken for burial at the chateau in Archstetten. What do you know about the mood among the Austrian high command? How angry are they about the loss of the son, well, strictly speaking, nephew and heir?
Well, I think it depends on if you're reading newspapers these days, if you believe in what newspapers says or what usually people from Vienna say. Never ever believe in newspapers, but believe what people talk about in the coffee houses. So if I think of what people are reading at the moment and then comment in the coffee houses and in the streets of Vienna, but what I first have to say is that it's beginning of July here, so it's pretty hot. And usually in Vienna, there is nothing going on because all people have left for their so-called Sommerfrische. So they left for some really nice landscape cities scattered all over Austria. But this time it's totally different. So lots of people have returned, but not many of them. So just them who were busy in taking part in how to react to all of this, like some high army members and some bureaucrats, but the rest is still in the countryside, which lots of people here think that this won't become a huge crisis or something like that. If I look back last couple of years, so every year was something going on. Last year was the Balkan War. The year before was the first Balkan War. So people are somehow annoyed. So they think, okay, it's a big thing. The heir of the throne was murdered or killed. Maybe something will come out of that, but probably it would be best to spend holidays first and then decide.
Quentin, there's a certain amount of that reassurance echoed here in the UK by at least some of the British newspapers. The Manchester Guardian has said this week, and I quote, "It is not to be supposed that the death of the Archduke Francis Ferdinand will have any immediate or salient effect on the politics of Europe." So that's good to know. But another observation the Guardian has made does make me wonder, though, Quentin, about the frailties of humankind at a moment like this. The Manchester Guardian again notes The Habsburgs have produced many lunatics and one great statesman, and there they're talking about Charles V, Holy Roman Emperor, and that was 400 years ago or something. Is there a possibility that the Habsburgs, possibly at this point somewhat decadent and, dare I say, inbred, are just not up to managing a crisis of this magnitude?
What worries me is that we're seeing two great empires, a frontier between them, the Habsburg Empire and the Ottoman Empire, both of them frail, weak, ruled by old men, and there's a sort of mood of really decay about the whole thing. And I think there's a real danger that on both sides, there could be much more hot-headed people who will actually find in this some sort of excuse to really push their empire back into an active mood. I mean, there has been that sort of criticism going on in Vienna for some time, saying if only the emperor would actually do something. I think people have been getting pretty fed up. And the idea that an incredibly bloody act like this could somehow be passed over, I think maybe a bit exaggerated. I mean, can we just imagine how people would feel in London if a leading member of the British royal family were assassinated by an Irish nationalist? I think the mood would actually be pretty explosive.
Well, I guess, Tamara, if we expand that analogy back to the Balkans, which is, of course, where we come into this, is there a sense that at least some close to the top of the Austro-Hungarian High Command and perhaps even the German High Command have been looking for a while now for an excuse to take a pop at Serbia, and that the assassination of the Archduke Ferdinand may not end up being a reason for an attack on Serbia as a justification for something that people wanted to do anyway?
Well, I would say, as someone who is for a long time now staying in Vienna, I would say, I mean, for all over the years, I observed that something like the Austrians always criticized, and from year to year, people were thinking of and speaking about how long will this empire last in this or that way. So everyone was already pretty much into it won't last for long because it can't work with all these national tension. But I think it's something where we have to think that also very many people living in Austria-Hungary, so not only in Vienna, regardless if they support the monarchy or support how politics work at the moment, they somehow think of, oh, this old man in Vienna, like Emperor Francis Joseph, probably he will solve it again, like calming it down, and there will nothing come out of it. But on the other hand, people are also speaking of that there is some kind of army members who want to make career. There was no war for a long time, always causing us troubles. There is something like, what if Serbia wants to rescue the remaining Serbs living in Austria-Hungary and especially in Bosnia-Herzegovina, something like finalizing a Serbian risorgimento, like a unification like in Italy, already took place. And so maybe there will some high-ranking army members say something like, let's use this opportunity to get rid of the Serbs once and for all.
Tamara, just to follow that up, Serbia did, of course, expand considerably during those two Balkan wars of recent memory, but it's still not that big a deal, is it? It's still 4.5 million people. It's a fairly backward economically and technologically sort of place, certainly compared to places like Austria and Germany. Does anybody perceive it as actually a threat, or actually do they possibly perceive it as quite the opposite, an easy win, which demonstrates the potence and the might and the authority of the empire?
Well, the thing is with Serbia that I would say especially army members, maybe in internal circles, but not officially, would say like, should we judge Serbia as being exhausted from these previous wars, or is it now experienced and motivated enough to somehow finish their project of unification so that all Serbs live in one Serbian nation state? Or what is also very intriguing, so we do know Austro-Hungarian army high command does not know how will these Serbs living in Austria-Hungary, Bosnia-Herzegovina, how will they react if there will be some violence taking out or even a war against Serbia. That a thing which is already discussed very often, but will surely come up again, is like, how is public opinion about if Austria-Hungary declares war on Serbia, especially what is the mood in Washington? What is it in London? What does Paris say? So it's not only up to officers of the high command say, well, let's solve this problem once and for all, but it's also how will other countries, how will European powers and also the US react if Austria-Hungary declares war.
Quentin, we will come shortly to the question of how this crisis might be being perceived in other capitals, especially the one in which we are broadcasting. But before we do that, I want to talk about Berlin as a city you know well and have reported from. Why does Germany seem to be taking such a keen interest in this? There are these reports that Kaiser Wilhelm II has said he's in favour of settling accounts with Serbia, whatever that means. It does seem to be the case that the chief of the German General Staff, Helmut von Moltke, is revving everybody up somewhat. Is there not a danger here that if they do take a pop at Serbia, that it might not end up being quite the easy and decisive win they seem to be anticipating?
I think the mood in Berlin is not so much about Serbia, it's about Russia. Straight away, the concern in Berlin is about being encircled, and the Russian-French alliance has really worried them. So they see in Serbia, which is surely not, I mean, I don't understand what the Kaiser says when he talks about settling accounts with Serbia. This is not personal to Germany. The danger to Germany is that Russia might actually defend Serbia and use this as a casus belli. So what you've got in Berlin, I think, is a feeling that the Austro-Hungarian Empire is Berlin's safest, most secure ally in a world where Berlin is feeling quite endangered, really, or it's just not respected, and that therefore they have given Vienna pretty well a blank check to do as they want in the Balkans, and they're going to back them up.
Quentin, just to follow that up, and I do notice the slight tone of perplexedness in your voice there, but as you quite correctly note, that there is this Franco-Russian alliance, and there has been since the 1890s. This is not news, nor is it news that it vexes Germany somewhat by making them feel encircled, but if a war with Serbia did draw Russia into that, would that not actually spring the very trap of which Germany claims to be afeared? Because that would mean Russia is in, and that would appear to mean that France is in, and at that point it's on for young and old, isn't it?
I think the mood in Berlin is quite difficult to analyse, because there is a self-confidence about Germany rising, that Germany has actually been an extraordinary industrial success story in the last years, and that it's not getting the respect that it deserves, whether it's from Britain or France or Russia and so on. So I think there is a certain resentment there. But having said that, there's also bad personal relations, and we may come back to this, but I think there's a resentment on the part of the Kaiser in Berlin at the way he's treated both by his British cousins and by his Russian cousin, that again, he's not given the respect he deserves.
Tamara, I want to go back to that point you made about how this crisis is being viewed from foreign capitals. And you mentioned Paris and London. You even mentioned Washington, D.C., though it does seem extraordinary to imagine that President Woodrow Wilson would be getting terribly invested in this from all that way away. So let's look at Europe first of all. How nervous might politicians and royalty, indeed, where London's concerned, be by watching what is unfolding in Europe this week?
If I follow the discussion on the streets in Vienna when it comes to how will foreign powers react on this crisis, it's not that much London which comes up in recent days, but it's much more Paris. Paris in particular, and you said something in the beginning with who is interested in the Balkans, like picking up Bismarck's comment. Well, on the other hand, and this is pretty much clear, is that, of course, Austria-Hungary is an empire, still an empire, but it's also a Balkan country. And I think this is very important. So when it's up to Balkan affairs, Austria-Hungary is not all exclusively a power which looks from outside on the Balkans, but it's covering more or less huge parts of the Balkans and also its peoples. And therefore, every time something happens, and if it's with the Serbs, there was huge migration going on from the Balkans, from Southeastern Europe in the last couple of decades. And this means every time something happens here, that in other countries where lots of these people live, there is some kind of discussion. People know what's going on in Serbia. And I think this is the reason why they more tend to focus on Paris these days and less on London, because Paris is also seen by lots of Serbs, not only these living in Serbia, but Austria-Hungary, like a country which will surely support. They were always in favor with the small nation states taking up this idea of one state, one nation principle. And this is also something which might become influential in what comes next.
Quentin, one, I guess, strata of diplomacy from which France has excluded itself since about 1789 or so will, of course, be the royal strata of diplomacy. And that is one of the curiosities of the scenario now unfolding. I do realise that for the purposes of this metaphor, there are only two kings on the average chessboard, but we have three in play here, which are, of course, George V of the United Kingdom, Kaiser Bill in Germany, and Tsar Nicholas II in Russia. They are, of course, all cousins. Is there any kind of possibility for some sort of constructive diplomacy enabled by that? We're not really going to see Europe enmeshed in what would be the world's most colossal family feud, are we?
Well, he certainly shouldn't be, I think, because they do know each other very well. They go sailing together, for goodness sake. They have sort of summer picnics together. Having said which, I do rather get the impression that relations are a bit scratchy. Not so much with our beloved King George V at the moment, but his father, King Edward VII, seemed to rub people up the wrong way. Both Kaiser Wilhelm and Nicholas in Moscow felt patronised by him, and he was, after all, most of the time they were growing up together, he was only a prince and they were already rulers. But having said that, he always rather talked down to them. He was their uncle. They were the new, rising, younger generation. So while on the one hand I would have thought it's a complete no-brainer that they should sit down and actually sort things out, on the other hand, families sometimes have the worst sort of squabbles, and I have a slightly nasty feeling that there isn't an awful lot of love lost between them.
Tamara, we are coming to the end of our discussion, and I don't want to conclude matters on an unnecessarily alarmist note for what may turn out in the grand scheme of things to be something of a storm in a teacup, generally no really big deal, certainly not the sort of thing that they would be making radio programs about 107 years from now. So what at this point would need to happen for such tensions as we are hearing about to abate? Who would need to do what to calm everybody's nerves a little at this point?
I think the most important question here in Vienna at the moment is who decides finally what to do? And when I'm reading the newspaper and notes from all over Europe, so people somehow on the streets here fear that it's not the emperors anymore, because if this old Kaiser would decide, he would certainly calm down everything as he did already for so long. But people fear that maybe the mood on the streets, which are lots of people didn't like Ferdinand either, but lots of people don't like Serbia and they want to calm it down. So they want to have every year announcing stories about Serbia and that all these crises will lead to war. And I don't see anybody except for the emperor to calm it all down at the moment.
All that notwithstanding, Quentin, and just finally, this will all be over by Christmas, won't it?
I hope it will. We haven't had a serious war in Europe, very localised affairs, for decades. And it would be unconscionable, actually, for us to blunder into some bigger war. But what worries me is, sitting here in London, actually, that people here are not watching out for the dangers. They're not really taking it very seriously. They're very distracted by the rise of the suffragettes, of the Home Rule campaign in Ireland. Nobody's really paying any attention. And I have just a nasty feeling that we could blunder into something stupid.
Well, it couldn't be any more ridiculous than Home Rule for Ireland or Votes for Women, like either of those things would ever happen. Quentin Peel and Tamara Shear, thank you both for joining us. That's it for this episode of The Foreign Desk. We'll be back next week with the next installment of our summer series, which focuses on the Suez Crisis of 1956. And look out for The Foreign Desk Explainer, available every Wednesday. The Foreign Desk was produced by Emma Searle and Christy Evans. Sophie Monaghan-Coombs was our researcher. Christy also produced this week's Foreign Desk Explainer. From me, Andrew Muller, thank you very much for listening. Ladies and gentlemen, the King. All rise. Right.